above the Diamantina. A human story from Northwest Queensland.
After leaving Coolibar Homestead, Napoleon Bonaparte paid a visit to John Kane at his station Tintaroo and discovered that until recently, Kane had in his possession a quantity of nitroglycerin. And it was nitroglycerin which was partly responsible for the destruction of the stolen aeroplane. On the now empty carboy, he found a deformed fingerprint, which he is confident of being able to identify. Several days later, Boney drives into Golden Dawn, draws up before the police station, and walks inside to meet Sergeant Cox.
Good morning, Sergeant Cox.
Boney, there you are at last. Where in the world have you been?
On a walkabout. I told you I would be away for several days.
Yes, but it's been extremely inconvenient. I've been trying everywhere to get hold of you.
Why, what has happened now?
They've found out who the paralyzed girl is.
By Jove, have they indeed? This is excellent news, excellent. Oh, just one moment. I wish to ask you one question first.
But don't you want to know who the girl is?
All in good time. First of all, would you be so kind as to tell me something about John Kane? You checked up the whereabouts of everyone on the night of October the 28th, when the airplane was stolen?
Yes.
What did John Kane say about his actions?
He told me the sound of the plane woke him up. He was staying in the hotel. He then ran out into the street and joined a crowd of people who watched it fly overhead.
Yes, that is right. Now, what did Dr. Knowles tell you?
He said he ran out of his own house towards the hangar where he kept his aeroplane. He thought someone was trying to steal his own machine.
Ah, that is very interesting. Go on.
Well, when he found his plane was safe, he went back to his house, dressed, and went into the street to join the crowd. He spoke to me there, as a matter of fact.
I see. Then he was not outside the hotel when Loveacre's machine flew over.
Oh, certainly not. That would have been impossible.
Thank you. That is all I wanted to know. Now, please tell me about the girl.
Well, the licensee of the Masonic Hotel at Broken Hill reported to the police that the picture of the girl, which of course was published in all the papers, was recognized by his wife. The young woman, it appears, had stayed a night there on the 20th of October.
Indeed. Where did she come from?
Well, she arrived by the Adelaide Express, which reached Broken Hill at 8:30 in the morning. During the afternoon, she was visited by a young man. The following morning, she paid her bill and walked out. That was about 10 o'clock.
And her name?
Muriel Markham.
The initials, double M. We are on the right track now, Sergeant.
Undoubtedly. Now, yesterday, a report arrived from the CIB Adelaide. A woman known as Muriel Markham lived with her mother at 29 Smith Street, Mitcham, up to the 19th of October. No, I'm sorry, that's not quite right. The mother died on the 2nd of October, but Miss Markham remained there until the 19th. When the furniture was removed and sold at an auction sale.
A forced sale, do you think? Poverty?
On the contrary, the Markhams were in comfortable circumstances. Their characters were both good, though they didn't mix much with their neighbors.
Well, go on, please, Sergeant.
A later report from the same source says that a solicitor named Ormond had charge of Mrs. Markham's estate. Everything was left to the daughter.
Where did Mrs. Markham derive her income?
A pension. But from what source, I don't know.
Sergeant, will you please communicate with the CIB Adelaide and ask them to establish proof of birth of this Muriel Markham?
All right, anything else?
No, please continue.
Owen Oliver passed through St. Albans on the track to Birdsville on the 12th of October. He was driving John Kane's Dodge.
Where did you learn that?
Kyle, the constable at St. Albans, told me. It's a habit of his to note down the numbers of all strange cars passing through the town.
Did he see the Dodge return?
No, but it might have passed through St. Albans during the night.
Yes, even a policeman must sleep sometimes. Now, let us get this straight. A Mrs. and Miss Markham live in Mitcham, Adelaide. On the 2nd of October, Mrs. Markham dies, leaving the whole of her estate to her daughter. She is buried the next day. On October the 12th, Owen Oliver is seen driving John Kane's car southward from St. Albans.
That's an interesting link, Boney.
Very. On the 19th, Miss Markham has her mother's furniture removed to an auction room and later boards the Broken Hill train. She arrives at that city on the 20th, stays at the Masonic Hotel, and is visited by a young man. The next day, she leaves the hotel. On foot, mark you, carrying a suitcase. And then, the next time she is seen, she is sitting in the cockpit of a red monoplane on Emu Lake.
That pretty well covers her movements, except for the most important part, unfortunately.
Yes. Now, let us see. The mother dies on the 2nd, and on the 12th, Owen Oliver leaves for Broken Hill. 10 days later.
Owen Oliver? That's only supposition, isn't it?
The evidence bears it out. Anyway, I am trying to work out a theory. 10 days. Sergeant, will you find out whether a letter could be sent from Mitcham Adelaide to Golden Dawn and a reply received within 10 days?
Certainly.
That's a very nice lunch, thank you, Sergeant.
Glad you enjoyed it, Bonnie. Mr. Watts, the postmaster, ought to be along soon.
Yes, before he comes, I would like you to tell me something about young Owen Oliver. What kind of a fellow is he?
Oh, he drinks a bit and gambles. Too much pocket money has gone a long way towards spoiling him.
And yet I understand his father cut down his allowance recently. He is only allowed £3 a week now.
Who told you that?
Mr. Oliver, his father. I paid him a visit 2 days ago at Windy Creek.
Indeed. But £3 a week. I'll guarantee young Owen spends more than that each week over at the commercial hotel.
Then he must get money from another source. Did he ever learn to fly?
Not that I know of. He spent 2 years in an estate agent's office down in Adelaide. He might have learned to fly then, but I don't think so.
Adelaide again,
Why did you ask her?
Because after a long search, I found the tracks of Loveacre's monoplane near an uninhabited hut on Windy Creek Station.
Great heaven!
There is the missing link in our reconstruction of the aeroplane's flight from Golden Dawn to the Coolabah Road Junction.
By Jove, yes. That just fits in nicely. Then the thief must have flown the plane to Windy Creek, picked up the girl there, and flown on towards Emu Lake.
Exactly. The net is tightening, Sergeant. Now, have you anything else to tell me?
Yes, I have a man in the lockup who might interest you. He's been here for 2 days now.
Is that the swaggy who camped at the road junction the night the aeroplane was stolen?
Yes. He walked back to Golden Dawn because he heard there was a job of work going at Ollery Downs. I locked him up as you suggested.
Was he annoyed?
Oh, not a bit. I hinted a few things and then told him I might get that job for him. He's as happy as Larry now.
May I come in, Sergeant?
Of course. Boney, you know Constable Lover, don't you?
Oh, yes, we have met already. How are you?
Fine, thanks, Inspector.
And I love it. We're just completing our investigations. Would you bring that swagman, Joyce, from the lockup into the office?
Yes, Sergeant.
Now, with reference to Ted Sharp, have you found out anything about that man whom he visited at Gurney's Hotel?
Not a thing, except that he reached Eureka by train, drove by car to Gurney's, then returning the next day the way he came.
Yes, we knew all that.
But I persuaded Mr. Watts to give me a copy of the telegram Sharp sent from the hotel.
Oh, did you? May I see it? Thank you. Telford, Box 1991Z, GPO, Brisbane. Have the money. My identity must not be discovered on any account. Be careful of Kane. Proceed. Edward Sharp. Who is this box number, Sergeant? Do you know?
Yes, the box is used by a firm of station agents. We've learned that the telegram was an instruction to them to purchase from Kane a property which he owns north of Tintaroo.
Yes, Nettlefold told me about it once. He thought of buying it.
Well, on behalf of Ted Sharp, they paid Kane £47,000 for it.
Indeed? That is a very large sum for a stockman to possess. We know, of course, that he had a legacy of £4,000 from an uncle, but I wonder where he obtained the rest.
Yeah. And then all this secrecy about the man he met at Gurner's.
We must find that man, Sergeant.
Here's Joyce, Sergeant.
Good, bring him in. Lovett, you better wait outside. I'll probably want you later on.
Right, Sergeant.
Well, Joyce, this is Detective Inspector Napoleon Bonaparte.
Good day, Inspector.
The Sergeant informs me you are taking a short rest here.
Well, it's a rest and an holiday. I has me 3 good meals a day and a bottle of beer at 11 o'clock in the morning and a 7 at night, and no disturbances up to date by any other blokes what's been pinched. I ain't complaining.
Would you consent to staying another week?
Too right, I'm happy enough.
Sergeant, does anyone in town know Joyce is staying in the lockup?
It's not general knowledge, Bernie.
Very well, then. You had better keep him here. Now, tell me, Joyce, on the 28th of October, you camped at the Coolabah Junction of the St. Albans Road.
Yes, that's right.
You say at about 3:10, you heard an aeroplane flying overhead. I have examined your campsite there, and I know you slept within 50 feet of the track. What time did you make camp that night?
Just after the sun went down.
What time did you turn in?
About 8:00.
Before you heard the aeroplane, did a car pass along the road?
Only a truck going towards Golden Dawn. It woke me up, but that was 11:20.
I see. You appear to be very sure of your times.
Too right. It was a clear night and no one can't fault me with the stars. I used to be at sea, you know. But after the aeroplane went by, there was two cars passed.
In which direction?
One went towards Tintaroo about 3:30 and the other towards Golden Dawn about 5:20. And both of them going for their lives.
Much faster than usual at nighttime.
My oath. They comes on me like a roaring willy-willy. They was gone by in a flash.
Yes, well, have you mentioned these occurrences to anyone else but the sergeant?
No fear. It ain't no practice of mine to make to any old joker what comes along.
Good. Well, I think that will do for the present, Joyce.
Then I can get back to me cubbyhole.
I'll take you along to the lock-up.
Don't trouble, Sarge. I knows me way. Hooroo.
Good day, Joyce. Well, Sergeant, that information is going to be exceedingly useful. I think we are nearing the end of our problems now.
I sincerely hope so.
I shall soon be asking you to take out a warrant.
Hello? Who's this?
Golden Dawn Police Station?
Yes, Sergeant Cox here. Who's speaking?
Ted Sharp. Dr. Knowles has asked me to ring you up.
Yes, yes.
He wants to know whether Ella Wally has been picked up yet.
I don't know. Captain Lubbock has gone to fetch him. Why?
Because he says the girl upstairs can't last much longer. She has taken a turn for the worse.
Good heavens, has she? All right, Ted, I'll let Dr. Knowles know as soon as I have any news. Is that all?
Yes, but it's very urgent.
I know it is. Captain Lubbock is doing his best, Ted. Tell him that, will you?
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
What is it, Sergeant?
Miss Markham has taken a turn for the worst. We've got to hurry, Boney, or we'll be too late to save her life.